This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America. The members of NATO are preparing to gather this July for their biannual summit. On this edition of the program, we discuss what to expect from this year's NATO summit in Warsaw, Poland, and how Great Britain's recent vote to leave the European Union might affect the NATO alliance. Hello again, I'm Carol Castiel. On July 8th and 9th, the 28 NATO leaders will meet in Warsaw, Poland, and some analysts say that it provides an opportunity to reinforce the NATO alliance in the wake of Britain's vote to leave the EU. Britain is the EU's second largest economy and one of only two EU member states with a permanent seat on the UN Security Council. The Warsaw summit comes at a defining moment for the security of the North Atlantic Alliance. NATO member Turkey is grappling with a horrific suicide attack at the Istanbul airport that killed at least 40 people and wounded more than 200. Russia's illegal annexation of Crimea and destabilization of Ukraine have defied the post-World War II order and set off jitters in the Baltic states, who feel threatened anew by Moscow. A 4,000-strong deterrent force is set to be positioned on the alliance's eastern border. The NATO summit is the first to be hosted in Poland. Well, with us to preview the upcoming NATO summit are Derek Chollet. He's former U.S. Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Affairs, now counselor and senior advisor for security and defense policy at the German Marshall Fund of the United States. He's also the author of the brand new book, The Long Game: How Obama Defied Washington and Redefined America's Role in the World. And Jeffrey Rathke. He's a senior fellow and deputy director of the Europe Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. He has over 20 years of experience in the U.S. diplomatic service around the world. And both gentlemen join me here at the VOA Broadcast Center in Washington. Welcome to the program.
It's great to be here. Thanks.
Thanks, Carol.
Derek Chollet, let me begin with you. Now, we're coming up on the NATO summit in the shadow of the horrific terrorist attack in Istanbul. And, of course, Turkey, a very important NATO ally, the only Muslim country as a part of NATO. How do you expect this to change the discussion at the summit?
The horrible attack at the Istanbul airport earlier this week only reinforces one of the main themes of the summit, which is NATO's threat to the south. Threats the alliance is facing from the east, and Russia's behavior on its eastern flank in Poland and the Baltics, threats that NATO's facing from the south, the crises emanating out of the Middle East and North Africa, whether that be the situation in Syria and Iraq and ISIS, which it's still early, but we believe that it's the origin of the attack in Istanbul earlier this week, but also more broadly across North Africa and Libya. And clearly our NATO allies in Italy and elsewhere are worried about the threats emanating out of Libya. But then also what we've seen is a threat from within, and that's what the concerns about the Brexit vote are all about. And so there is no shortage of threats and concerns that leaders will have to discuss in Warsaw. One of the challenges that leaders will face is addressing all of these issues at once, because from a U.S. perspective, one is not more important than the other, but all of these are huge challenges. There's no single policy answer for any of these. But I think the alliance has done some very important work in the last year in preparation for the summit, and hopeful there'll be some positive announcements coming out of the summit across all three of these threats.
And Jeff Rathke, how do you see the impact of this horrific suicide attack in Turkey affecting discussions at the NATO summit?
Well, I agree with what Derek has said. This is not the first terrorist attack inside Turkey. They have not all come from the same source, but again, Turkey has been the victim, unfortunately, of attacks by ISIL and then also attacks as part of the ongoing conflict with the Kurds. And it's not one challenge, it's multiple challenges, as Derek said. It's on the one hand, the civil war in Syria, the spread of ISIL in the region. It also has to do with a whole lot of civilian rather than military challenges that NATO can play a role in, but where NATO is not able to do it alone. And that brings us to another thing that I think we'll get into in the course of the program, which is the role of the European Union, NATO's relationship with the European Union, the U.S. relationship with the European Union, and how we in the United States take best advantage of the international institutions that play a role in security, because NATO is only one and much more focused on what you might call the kinetic and the hard military aspect of things.
Indeed, and that leads us to Brexit. Derek Chollet, because, of course, the UK has voted now to leave the European Union. So much turmoil inside Britain, both in the Labour Party and the Conservative Party, in addition to the impact on Europe and the United States. But let's say this is going to be a done deal. Article 50 of the Lisbon Treaty will eventually be triggered. How does Brexit affect the NATO alliance, of which the UK is still a very key member? Does it diminish in any way its influence, in your view?
Well, I think it's too early to conclude that. There's actually very little direct impact that the Brexit vote will have on the NATO alliance. In fact, actually, in the short term, I would expect that in Warsaw next week, you will see all 28 NATO leaders sending a very clear message of solidarity, unity, and resolve, if nothing else, to show that Brexit is not going to endanger the transatlantic security alliance. But as this plays out over time, and there's so many uncertainties with where this Brexit drama is going to go, whether it means a future dissolution of the United Kingdom and Scotland perhaps wanting to leave, or Northern Ireland wanting to leave, whether we see other countries within the European Union wanting to have their own exit, whether we see the economic downturn in Europe getting only worse because of the effects of the UK's departure from the EU. Those are things it's too early to tell. There's a good reason to be concerned about where this is going to go, but we just don't know that yet. If nothing else, I think what we can be certain of, that over the next several years, as the United Kingdom and the EU are sorting out the mechanism for UK withdrawal, and we see the secondary effects of the Brexit vote, whether it's Scotland or other countries want to leave the EU, Europe is going to be more divided and more preoccupied. There's going to be less political will and leadership bandwidth on the continent to work with the United States on other problems, whether those are problems in which NATO has a direct role, like reinforcing the eastern flank, to issues where NATO is important, but it's not playing the only role. For example, what's happening in the anti-ISIL campaign, where NATO countries have been stepping up. The alliance has been doing some modest steps, but NATO countries, European countries, are very involved. Just as a practical matter, if European leaders are spending most of the next 2 years sorting out their own internal situation and this existential question of what is Europe, they're just going to have less capacity to work with us on other problems. And I think that's going to be a challenge for the next 7 months in President Obama's remainder term in office. It will be a huge challenge for the next president.
How do you see it, Jeff Rathke, this sort of preoccupation on the part of Europe with Brexit? How is that going to affect the NATO alliance and the two working together?
I think NATO, in a way, is insulated from an immediate impact of Brexit because Britain is not questioning its membership in NATO. And indeed, Britain is the second largest military budget within NATO, the largest in Europe, second only to the United States, of course. And that commitment to the North Atlantic Treaty and to Article 5 is not going to change on Britain's part in the near term. But a lot of this is going to depend on how the negotiations over Britain's departure from the European Union evolve. Are they acrimonious? And do they affect the resolve of the British government and the British people to not just to do the necessary, but to make sacrifices and to lead within NATO on European security issues? And also the economics. We've had over the last 2 years within NATO a significant turnaround in the readiness of NATO allies to spend in their defense budgets. And they're all, you know, moving in the direction of the 2% of GDP target at different speeds. Will that continue if you have a recession not only in Britain, but perhaps across Europe? What kind of pressures is that going to put on public finances? And will it be possible to sustain that momentum toward greater defense commitments? I think those are all things that will be affected in the not too distant future by Brexit, which overall is a disaster for the post-war American policy toward Europe, which has supported integration and cooperation among our European allies and partners.
You're listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. My guests are Derek Chollet. He's former U.S. Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Affairs, currently counselor and senior advisor for security and defense policy at the German Marshall Fund of the United States, and Jeff Rathke, from whom you just heard. He's a former U.S. diplomat, now senior fellow and deputy director of the Europe Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies think tank here in Washington. And we're previewing next week's NATO summit in Warsaw, Poland. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available for free download on iTunes. You can find the download by clicking on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com/encounter. You may also follow me on Twitter at Carol Castiel VOA or connect with us on Facebook. Here's a shout out to a loyal fan from Monrovia, Liberia, John T. Tarpe. If you want to hear your name on the show, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Well, back to you, Derek Chollet, to further discuss the interplay between the European Union and NATO in the wake of this so-called Brexit. Now, we know that the United States and the UK have a special relationship and that the UK has played a very important role for the United States in the EU, sort of its ears and eyes, a sort of a kindred spirit, free trade promotion, just a little bit closer, mm-hmm. you know, than yeah. the United States has with a relationship that it has with France or Germany. Now, so in that regard, how will that affect the U.S. seat at the EU table in the wake of this Brexit?
Well, it will make it harder because you're absolutely right. The UK and the US, because of the unique relationship we have and all that we share, the UK has been quite often a voice for the United States around the EU table. And if envisioning an EU without that voice is one where things could be a little harder for the United States. And to get back to a point Jeff made earlier, a very important point, that particularly when we're looking at the challenges that Europe is facing to its south coming out of the Middle East and North Africa, those are issues, some of which the NATO military alliance can play a role, but many of which are really more appropriate for the EU to be dealing with because they're about economic issues, they're about civilian issues. It's not only military questions. Therefore, if NATO-EU cooperation is very important, having such a powerful voice outside the EU in the form of the United Kingdom will make that harder. It's been hard for years to try to create better relations between NATO and the EU for a variety of reasons. There is an US-EU summit, by the way, next week in Warsaw on the margins of the NATO summit. So President Obama will be meeting with EU leaders in that format in Warsaw, in addition to meeting with his NATO leaders. One of the goals will be to try to talk about ways that NATO and the EU can work more closely together. If we're envisioning 2 years down the road and the UK is no longer part of the EU, doesn't diminish the NATO alliance necessarily, although Jeff's absolutely right. When it comes to defense spending, that could be a problem if the European economies suffer as a result of Brexit. But it will make this question of the EU-NATO relationship harder to tackle. It's already hard enough, but with the UK out, it just is harder.
Right. And a quick follow-up before I turn back to Jeff, and that is that there's an idea being floated about the creation of a NATO-EU council so that the United States would have a seat at the table when EU security issues are discussed. What do you think the prospects of that are?
Well, I think it's an interesting idea. EU leaders already sit around NATO's political decision-making body, the North Atlantic Council, the NAC. So every defense ministerial or foreign ministerial, there's always an EU representative around that table. But I think it's an interesting idea to try to create a more formal mechanism, particularly as the EU itself is trying to strengthen its own internal security coordination as well as capacity.
Well, turning to you, Jeff Rathke, to get your view about this potential NATO-EU council to give the United States a seat at the table, so to speak, in discussing EU security issues. And again, how you see NATO's effectiveness as the British set to depart the European Union?
A few things come to mind. First, the NATO-EU relationship has improved dramatically in the last couple of years, not because of any political breakthrough, really, but simply because of the exigencies of so many challenging areas around the world where there's really no choice but to cooperate. So you see this in cyber, where there is at least discussion between NATO and the EU about cyber issues. You see this with regard to the migration crisis, where the EU is in the lead, but NATO is providing some support in the Aegean Sea, for example. And you see this across many other areas, especially with regard to the challenges from Russia and the so-called hybrid war aspects, where the EU is working on some of them, NATO is working on some of them. And they've had a fairly productive low-level relationship on these issues. The big things that prevent a NATO-EU partnership from reaching its full potential still remain there. That is the divided nature of Cyprus, the conflicting positions of Greece and Turkey on that, and so on and so forth. But we're also now at a point where EU leaders have a choice that they have to confront. That is, how do they respond not to the question of Britain leaving the EU, but to the, in some cases, similar political tendencies in their own societies? You know, the Brexit vote is a wake-up call for all of Europe, because many of the same sentiments that we saw in that referendum are prevalent in many other EU countries. And you see this seriousness in many of the official statements that have come from Chancellor Merkel, from President Hollande, from the EU institutions, leaderships as well. But what is not clear is what kinds of reforms they are going to seek. Is it going to be, as Derek mentioned, a stronger defense relationship among EU member states? Is it going to lead to the strengthening in some ways of the central institutions of the European Union? Or will it be a reliance on the idea of subsidiarity, that a return of many competencies to the member states? All those things will affect how the NATO-EU relationship can develop. 15 years ago, 10 years ago, it was extremely difficult for NATO and the EU to do anything, because it was a period when the integration process in Europe was stressing, largely pushed by France and Germany, the development of the EU's own defense policy and capabilities. That basically meant that everything within NATO became a battle between France and Germany on the one hand and the US and the UK on the other hand. And I think there's a serious danger that we could get back into that kind of a dynamic with the UK out of the EU. You know, the UK in the EU played such an important role, and so now we may have the return of that rather unhelpful dynamic.
Indeed. Well, you know, it just seems impossible to separate NATO from this recent Brexit vote. Unfortunately, we have to discuss them in tandem. And that brings us, of course, to Russia. Russia is certainly constitutes a major threat now to NATO, to NATO countries. The Baltic states are very nervous again, notwithstanding the troops now that will be on the border. So let's turn to that, Derek Chollet. To what extent do you think actually the Kremlin stands to gain from this Brexit vote? Are they jumping up and down in glee? How is this going to affect Putin's calculations, and how much of an issue will the threat from Russia be at this Warsaw summit?
I can pretty much guarantee that the day after the Brexit vote, copious amounts of vodka were consumed in the Kremlin. And if Putin has many goals as a leader, he obviously most concerned probably about regime stability, returning Russia to a place of great power status, having some control or unique influence over countries on his periphery. One of his core goals is to have a divided Europe and to have a preoccupied Europe. So the idea that for the next several years at least, Europe is going to be embroiled in this existential question of what the future of the EU is and whether or not the United Kingdom is still going to exist if Scotland decides to leave, all of the knockoff effects of the Brexit vote, that's all good for Putin. And what's most frustrating about this from an American perspective is that this is one of the crises in Europe that's self-inflicted. Europe is facing a lot of challenges, migration, its economic troubles, the rise in populism within the continent that Jeff's talked about. But Brexit was mainly about British politics, Tory British politics, and this was not necessary. Nevertheless, we have to deal with it. So if you're Vladimir Putin, you've gotten something for free, because he's been trying for the last several years to divide Europe, to test Europe by behaving in a certain way, right? This is something he didn't have to do anything, and he got this. So, you know, that's why it's incumbent upon our leaders when they get together next week in Warsaw, but more importantly for the weeks and months and years after Warsaw, to maintain unity, to not let Brexit divert us from all the good work we've been doing in the last several years to try to reassure our Eastern allies, modernize our military, spend more on our militaries, and have greater unity in the alliance. But it's going to be tougher.
Indeed. It's not funny, really, but it's just an unfortunate turn of events that many people believe that this Brexit vote was definitely a self-inflicted wound, much more to do with internal politics within the Conservative Party, but we are where we are. Back to you, Jeff Rathke. So with respect to the threat from Russia, what impact will Britain's decision to leave have on Russia's strategic footing around the globe, just as NATO is trying to curb Moscow's increasingly aggressive stance, whether in the Baltics or in other troubled regions like Syria.
I agree with Derek's analysis. I think the response and the success, though, of Western policy still remains in our hands. While this is a gift to Russia in some ways, because Russia has been unhappy ever since it agreed to all of the various aspects of the post-Cold War settlement, it has been unhappy from that point and has sought to weaken or replace them at every opportunity. So this is no exception. If it weakens European institutions, then it's good for Russia, given their zero-sum view of the world. But I think that NATO has enough capability, enough resources, and the right policy to deal with the destabilizing effects of Russia within Europe, especially along what people refer to as the eastern flank. And then to come back to the challenges in the south that we talked about earlier, there's more overlap there with Russia and a need to approach those issues carefully, especially the civil war in Syria. But that hasn't fundamentally changed as a result of the Brexit vote. One thing that I do think is important, the reaction from the U.S. administration up to now to the Brexit vote has been largely to say, everybody should just remain calm. Things will be okay, and this will work itself out, and we will remain strong friends and partners of both the UK and the European Union. But it's rapidly becoming time for the United States to signal not just that we're going to let the Europeans sort this out among themselves, but that this has a fundamental impact on us. I think now there is an analogous step that should happen, because the ongoing chaos within British politics, which is now not only a Tory phenomenon, but also a Labour phenomenon, is not good for the United States. And the sooner that that there is a clear direction in Britain, and then also Britain with its EU partners, the better for us.
Well, as we close, back to you, Derek Chollet, to discuss the significance of the fact that this summit is taking place in Warsaw, mm-hmm. Poland, for the first time. Mm-hmm. And again, what you think the outcomes will be, especially as we are reeling from the Brexit vote and the fact that Vladimir Putin is celebrating with lots of vodka.
He's a teetotaler.
Yeah,
I don't think he doesn't drink.
Okay. I'm sure those people around him.
At any rate, you know, the fact that this is unnerving people from, right. You know, the Baltics to right. Ukraine to elsewhere,
right.
As well as, of course, here in the United States, we need to, you know, hold firm against his aggressive moves around the world.
That's right. And this summit, because of the location in Warsaw, will be full of symbolism. The leaders will be having dinner one night of the summit in the very same room where the Warsaw Pact was created. There's no question that that's why the Poles wanted to host the summit, and that's why NATO was happy to give them the hosting opportunity to send that strong message of unity and resolve, and our commitment, the NATO shared commitment to our allies in the East. But it's going to be more than symbols in this summit. We're going to see, I think, some substantive announcements which are meaningful. Many of those are already known. The decision to deploy the forces in Baltics and Poland for multinational NATO battalions, the U.S. announcement to quadruple our defense spending in Europe and have our own forces placed in Baltics in the East. But then also looking south, NATO's, I believe, will be announcing a decision to augment the training it's doing of the Iraqi security forces and do that in Iraq. Also make some announcements on maritime efforts to try to curb the migration in the Mediterranean. I think the most important thing, and it's been really the theme of our conversation during this program, has been the shared resolve and message of unity and determination to stick together. And Brexit only adds to the reasons why they're going to want to send this message, to show that Brexit's not going to throw the alliance off course. But that will really be a challenge for the next summit.
I'm afraid on that note, that's all the time we have on this edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guest, Derek Chollet. He's counselor and senior advisor for security and defense policy at the German Marshall Fund, and Jeffrey Rathke, senior fellow and deputy director of the Europe Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Gentlemen, thanks so much for your terrific
insights.
Thanks
for having us.
Thanks. Thank you, Carol.
Thanks to Anna Zalewski for booking our guests. Our engineer was Justin Thwaites, and Encounter was produced here in Washington. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Encounter on The Voice of America.